Thanks for downloading a 3CR podcast. 3CR is an independent community radio station based in Melbourne, Australia. We need your financial support to keep going. Go to www.3cr.org.au for more information and to donate online. Now stay tuned for your 3CR podcast.
And welcome to Stick Together, Australia's only national radio show all about workers' rights and social justice. Stick Together is produced at 3CR Radio in Melbourne and broadcast across the country on the Community Radio Network. I'm Diana Beaumont.
And I'm Jack Barry. Later in the program today, I'll be talking with Kate Lee, the Executive Officer of Union Aid Abroad AFIDA, about their current projects, including their agricultural and educational programs in the Gaza Strip, that have been bombed and destroyed by the Israeli military during the latest conflict.
But first today, incredible things are also happening in Tasmania that we hear so little about in the mainstream media in other states. The state Liberal government in Tasmania, under the leadership of Will Hodgman, has only been in office since March, but already it's trying to bring in very extreme restrictions on protests and union bargaining. A set of laws, already passed through the Tasmanian lower house, would introduce mandatory fines and jail sentences for protesters who interfere with the operation of a business. While we wait to see if this will get through the upper house in October, the Hodgman government is also talking about introducing legislation that would overrule the current awards that set the wages for public servants in Tasmania. A short time ago, I spoke to Matt Johnston, Acting Secretary of the Community and Public Sector Union in Tasmania. I asked him how it's possible for a government to use legislation to override a legally binding industrial award.
So late last year, Tasmanian public sector workers through their unions bargained for, negotiated and agreed on a set of real wage cuts. This is the this would amount to 6 years of real wage cuts. We've already had three. We agreed to three more. And what's happened after that, on the back of an election declared and returning a Liberal government in March in Tasmania, is that the Liberal government is now signalling an intention to legislatively override both industrial agreements arising out of the Tasmanian Industrial Relations Act, but also, perhaps more importantly, to override and undermine the wages in the tables in our award structure. So, look, I don't know how they're going to go about that exactly in terms of the bill. We're looking forward to seeing the bill, should they persist with this strategy. But in the end, I think they're going to have to walk a very fine line in terms of their legislative ability here in getting the bills through Parliament.
And is there any precedent for this across the country, using legislation to override an award?
I'm not sure that there is, certainly not that we've come across yet. Look, we'll see the exact form of the bills they present to Parliament at some stage, should they persist with the strategy, as I said. But no, I'm not aware of any precedent. So this will be a precedent-setting initiative from them. And look, I think that people in unions and workers across the country who work for state governments ought to be very concerned about what's happening in Tasmania at the moment.
And as you mentioned, public sector workers in Tasmania had already accepted an effective pay cut by agreeing to a 2% wage adjustment in the last agreement. But clearly, this wasn't radical enough a cut. Is the Tasmanian state government arguing that by cutting pay even further, by making it 0% adjustment, the government will be able to avoid the 1,500 layoffs it's already announced?
No, they're not saying that. What they're saying is, publicly they're saying that they can save some 500 jobs or FTEs out of freezing wages and incremental progression. However, when pushed, they will not guarantee that. So it's a nice soundbite for our Treasurer, Mr. Gutwin, to come out with to media, but there's no substance behind it.
Oh, so wage cuts and job cuts.
Indeed, and we've already suffered significant real wage cuts over the last 3 years, with the former administration down here, a Labor Green government, and that was by agreement through the normal negotiated processes, and there weren't trade-offs to do with that. That was simply the public sector taking responsibility for their part in trying to bring Tasmania out of the economic doldrums. And late in the last term of government, we agreed to a further 3 years of real wage cuts. And all this was being done in the face of significant job losses, as it was. So look, public sector workers down here have carried their share of the burden through increasing demand for services while decreasing staff numbers and taking real wage cuts already. And it's simply arrogant for the government to force their ideological agenda onto public sector workers and cut their pay by breaching their contract legislatively.
Well, before we go on to other ways in which the Tasmanian state government is trying to undermine working conditions and limit protest, I wanted to hear a little bit more about the job cuts in Tasmania. In an interview in June, you told the ABC that your union, the CPSU, expects to see overall a 7.5 to 10% cut to jobs in the public sector under the Hodgman state government. But how can the government possibly maintain anywhere near the current level of service provision and public services with such layoffs?
They simply can't. Already the Tasmanian public sector is under significant strain in terms of service delivery. We have a low socioeconomic demographic sort of profile down here, and that results in an increasing demand for all types of services governments provide. And look, our people are really struggling at the moment in areas like child protection, in some of the human services areas in particular, where the implications of failure by the government to adequately resource these areas results in real problems for families and young people. And, you know, we've got the same thing manifesting across our education and primary health system as well. So it's a really difficult time. And in the face of increasing demand, our people are really struggling to deliver services they want to the Tasmanian community.
We're speaking to Matt Johnston, who's Acting Secretary of the Community and Public Sector Union in Tasmania. The government in Tasmania has also proposed changes to the Industrial Relations Act that would compel the industrial umpire to fall in behind government policy when it comes to wages. What effect will this have on bargaining, Matt?
Yeah, so the second part of the government's legislative agenda down here is, and publicly they've stated this, is to fetter the ability of the industrial umpire to make orders other than agreeing with government wages policy. Now, in our context, that is effectively meaning the independent umpire can only issue orders that agree with the employer. So we can still arbitrate on wages, but we cannot expect an order from the Commission that's anything but agreeing with the employer.
And that makes arbitration useless.
Absolutely it does. And, I mean, this is attacking one of the fundamentals of our industrial relations system, where you have basically an independent tribunal or judiciary that can step in where you have significant disputation around wages. And unfortunately, this is an ideological attack on the ability of an independent umpire to find in favour of working people. And the implications for bargaining are really quite stark, because unless we have access to an independent umpire that can arbitrate once we've become, you know, got into an intractable wages situation, really there's no compulsion or impetus for the employer to move at all, because they know that the umpire can only blow the whistle and point one direction.
Is there similar legislation in New South Wales?
Look, I understand there is similar legislation in New South Wales. That's been subject to some high court challenges, I understand, from our branch over there, but also some other public sector unions. The New South Wales government seems intent on persisting and strengthening those type of provisions. What we're seeing in Tasmania is sort of a cascading effect of a number of very, very poor ideological legislative agendas down the east coast of Australia, and all of a sudden we've got ourselves the worst of each of those jurisdictions down here, and effectively turning Tasmania into an industrial battleground, so that if they get this stuff through here, they certainly have a precedent and a mandate, they'll say, to try and roll this out in other jurisdictions.
You're listening to Stick Together on the Community Radio Network, and my guest is Matt Johnston from the CPSU in Tasmania. And as if what Matt's been telling us wasn't enough, the Tasmanian state government has introduced another bill limiting the right to protest, which has actually passed through Tasmania's lower house as of the end of June, and it's due to be debated in the upper house in October. And as you might have heard on community radio already, this bill would make it an offence to hold a protest that prevents business activity. Protesters, if they breach this bill, could be given on-the-spot fines of $2,000. And if they commit a second offence, then there is a 3-month mandatory jail sentence. Matt, your union, the CPSU, is one of the unions that's spoken out against this. Why do you think the bill's unfair?
Look, every single affiliate to the Tasmanian Trades and Labour Council is on board with this, and we...
Meaning they're opposing it.
Sorry, yeah, united in opposing this legislation. That includes forestry unions and everyone else. In the Tasmanian context, sort of the genesis of this legislation came out of trying to limit the ability of forest protesters in particular to stop contractors getting wages by precluding work. What it turned into, unfortunately, when they drafted the bill, was to broaden the scope of the application such that it criminalises any activity that hampers business, as you said in the introductory remarks. And look, our concern with this is on the industrial front. There's a few moral issues with it as well, of course, but on the industrial front, the bill does have an exclusion with regard to protected industrial action taken under the Fair Work Act. However, our industrial relations legislation in Tasmania doesn't have similar provisions, so you don't have the status of protected industrial action, and as such, any activities by our members in particular that hampered any type of business, whether it's a secondary or tertiary type of engagement, would breach the anti-protest legislation, and as such, our members would be subject to mandatory fines and, on a second offence, mandatory jail sentences. Nothing good in the community has ever come from criminalising legitimate democratic expression of opinion. So, look, it's really troubling times in terms of your ability to express dissent with whatever it is you wish to express dissent with in Tasmania. When you criminalise normal democratic behaviour, then you'll end up with another penal colony down here. I mean, it's a ridiculous thing that criminalises something that most citizens will do during their lifetime on some issue at some stage. So
Totally disproportionate, a mandatory 3-month jail sentence for interrupting a business through protest action.
Exactly right. And, I mean, you're taking away, you're investing in the bill itself, and your listeners, if they're interested, could go to the Parliament of Tasmania website and take a look at the bill as one of the worst pieces of legislation they probably would have ever seen. And you go to that, and it invests a level of discretion in the police in terms of their powers of arrest and charge and so forth, while disempowering the judiciary to make appropriate decisions based on the law. So what you're doing is again, fettering the independence of an umpire, of a judiciary, and making it so that they can only make a decision in accordance with the statute.
Well, Matt, you've outlined three alarming ways in which the Tasmanian state government is trying to undermine the rights of workers. They're talking about introducing legislation to override the awards, to bind the industrial umpire to only follow government policy in making decisions on wages, and this latest law that would limit the right to protest. Tell us, Matt, what has been the union movement's response and the response of other social movements? What protest action has been organised, and is there any way that listeners in other states around the country can get involved?
Yeah, there is. And look, this has been a really fast-paced initiative from the government. They have not, since election in March, they've not held back in terms of trying to go after those people they see as threats, and that is working people and people with opinions contrary to them. So what we've done over the last 6 weeks since some of this became apparent is hit up work sites and talk to members and educate members around what is actually at play here, because there's a vacuum of information from the government. They're relying on ignorance, to be honest, to slip these bills through the upper house. They've got the numbers in the lower house, of course, and they're going to look to rely on a level of apathy and disinformation to get it through the upper house. What we've done in terms of the education program in workplaces has been really profound, and we've got engagement from our members from a vast, you know, and diverse group of members who are generally fairly conservative in terms of their level of activity. People are getting active, and we're going to be deploying for a rally on Budget Day this week. So our delayed state budget is being handed down on Thursday this week, and we're expecting a coalition of unions, union members, and some other civil society groups to come together on the lawns of our Parliament House to voice their opinion about what is the legislative trajectory of this government.
You said they don't have the numbers in the upper house?
We have an independent upper house, effectively. There's a few party players in there, but mainly we're talking about, in some cases, fairly conservative independents. You know, they hold themselves fairly proudly as separate from the lower house in the Legislative Council. So, look, we're hopeful that we can engage with Legislative Councillors to make it clear to them that not only is this, you know, a repugnant set of bills that they're going to be presented with, but also that it doesn't reflect community values. Tasmania is a really egalitarian society. I don't think that thinking Tasmanians who hear the story that I've told you and your listeners today are going to support measures like these. They're clearly anti-worker, they're clearly anti-democratic. And look, we're hopeful that the Legislative Council make the right call on these bills when they're presented.
Well, Matt Johnson, Acting Secretary of the Community and Public Sector Union in Tasmania, keep up the good work and thanks for joining us today on Stick Together.
Thank you, and thank you very much for your time.
And information about what the Liberal government's doing in Tasmania can be hard to find in the mainstream media. So for more information, go to the CPSU's website or their Facebook page, or get in touch with your local branch of the CPSU. You're listening to Stick Together, workers' stories and union news. Broadcast around the country every week on the Community Radio Network.
If you've been reading too much of the Murdoch press, you might be thinking that unions are made up of corrupt monsters. So today we'll be talking to Kate Lee, the Executive Officer of Union Aid Abroad, AFIDA. AFIDA is the Overseas Humanitarian Aid Agency of the ACTU, Australia's peak union body. It provides a way for union members in affluent Australia to assist working people overseas who have been the victims of poverty and war. Kate begins by telling me about AFIDA's current program in Gaza.
AFIDA's been working with local partner organisation called the Man Development Centre in Gaza and in the West Bank for 25 years now. In recent years, in the early years, it was with money raised through community fundraising in Australia. In more recent years, we've been in receipt of Australian aid money to deliver what's basically a very large agricultural and livelihoods program, developing skills for people to undertake small-scale farming effectively so that they can earn a living, they can grow produce that they can use for their own families, but they can, you know, also grow produce to be able to sell small amounts to market and earn a living. So that program work has been going on for 25 years. Of course, in the current conflict, most of that work has been destroyed. A lot of the agricultural program work was in the, you know, what's considered the no-go zone, and parts of that boundary area of Gaza have been completely flattened. And so even though our staff haven't been able to access those sites to figure out exactly what's been destroyed, we're pretty sure that most of those greenhouses, the sheep and chicken farming, the beekeeping facilities, all of that's been pretty much destroyed. In recent years, AFIDA was also helping with childhood development work and supporting the children that have been obviously so badly affected by ongoing conflict and war. With Australian aid money, we've helped build playgrounds in a huge number of sites. But with that, constructive play activities for kids for childhood development purposes, and we understand all of those playgrounds have been destroyed as well.
Yeah.
So, Now, our estimate, that's probably about $2 million worth of Australian aid money's effectively been destroyed over the last 6 weeks of work that's been undertaken over the last 5 years. But look, leaving that to one side, you know, the current program of AFIDA exists in about 15 countries around the world,
mm-hmm.
60 projects. Wow. From work in the Pacific, in the Solomon Islands, an important program, building skills, working through local network of community learning centres to help build local skills for people so that they can earn some kind of income. For people in the Pacific, you know, trying to earn what we would consider any kind of full-time income is, you know, pretty much impossible, but people do our program allows people to develop some skills so that they can, you know, build furniture to earn an income for their own communities, or you know, agricultural work, so that they can, you know, feed families and feed people in their communities. In Timor Leste, AFIDA helps fund a range of programs there, from the Working Women's Centre in Dili through to the KSTL, which is the peak trade union body in Timor, organising workers in the formal workforce, right through to agricultural skills and development support again. In Cambodia, a big focus is on agricultural support and developing and farming skills for local communities, as it is in Laos as well. In Vietnam, the focus is a bit different. There's a combination of trade union development work, working with the VGCL, the peak trade union body, but also some program work working with people with disabilities, a new program supporting women, a women's program around domestic violence, as well as programs supporting women's participation in local, effectively local level elections. In Africa, it's a really broad range of work again, everything from community radio through to organic farming, through to HIV work that I mentioned earlier.
Mm-hmm.
On the Thai-Burma border, AFIDA's been working there since about 1996, supporting the exiled refugee community to develop skills for a democratic Burma. So there's everything from assisting people in refugee camps there with healthcare needs, right through to training young Shan people from the Shan state in northern Burma to develop political and human rights training skills so that they can be effective workers for NGOs or other work on the Thai-Burma border in organisations in Thailand, but increasingly inside Burma as well. We're also supporting community radio on the Thai-Burma border, as well as the Karen Women's Organisation, an impressive organisation of 50,000 women inside Karen State, as well as in the Karen refugee camps on the Thai-Burma border. And they've got a really comprehensive program for training women to be active in their organisation and active in their community, around all sorts of things, from domestic violence to healthcare for children, to what you might call more human rights or democracy training for people that want to be active, you know, inside a changing Burma. We also began a small program of supporting the emerging trade union movement inside Burma last year. And at the moment, that program involves really, I guess, 101 basic union education work for workers who now have the right to form a union if they want to, at the enterprise level or at the workplace level. So there's a small program working with local union activists and newly emerging organisations there. As I said, in the Middle East, we've been working with in the occupied Palestinian territories for 25 years, but also supporting Palestinian refugee camps in Lebanon as well. In the Philippines, we still are doing some work 20-odd years on around education, around HIV for workers, but also supporting people that are trying to work the garbage dumps to earn a living. And also assisting and supporting trade union building as well. That's a very quick overview. I've left out a few countries as well, but there you go. That's a little bit of an overview.
Definitely. Now, there's a fundraiser coming up on the 11th of September in Melbourne for Gaza. Now, where is this fundraiser and how can people get along? Do they have to book in advance or what's the arrangement?
I think that the fundraiser is on September 11 in Melbourne at the Bella Union Bar at 6:30, I think. And anyone can get along on the night. I think you can also pre-book. I'm sure we're going to have a link very soon to our website if we don't already have it, which is www.apheda.org.au. Mm-hmm. It's being organised by Unionists in Victoria who are wanting to assist the call from our local partner organisation in Gaza, the Marne Development Centre, who is delivering emergency aid and assistance, and they've asked for our help. And we've been raising, well, so far we've raised over $100,000 from Australian unionists and communities around Australia who want to support that. Get along in Melbourne to that.
That's at the Bella
if
Union.
Want to regularly.
That's at the Bella Union Bar
Bella Union
Trades
Bar.
Hall in. It's on the corner of Victoria and Lygon Street in the city. So if people do want to come along, that's where it is. And it's on the 11th of September this year.
And if people want to donate regularly to Union Aid Abroad, they can donate $10 a month or more if they can afford it by joining our global justice program. And to join, you can also go to the website as well and join online. Or download a form and send it to us or fax it to us or email.
And that's all we have time for on Stick Together this week. Remember, you can donate to AFEDA's overseas projects via its website. And that's www.apheda.org.au or by phone. And that's 02-92-64-9343.
And if you'd like to get in touch with us here at Stick Together, you can call us at 3CR Radio on 03-9419-8377. Find us at 3cr.org.au or on the Stick Together Facebook page.
Thanks to the Community Broadcasting Foundation for its support of the program. I'm Jack Barry.
And I'm Diana Beaumont. And to acknowledge the more than 2,000 people killed in Gaza, we'll go out with a track, Free Palestine by Ambassador. Thanks for listening to Stick Together, and do tune in again at the same time next week.
Freedom for Palestine, freedom for Gaza, freedom for every child, mother and father, who are being bombed by the bombs of Obama. I'm bursting out tears while you're bursting out with laughter. Freedom for Palestine, freedom for Gaza, freedom for every child, mother and father, who are being bombed by the bombs of Obama. I'm bursting out tears while you're bursting out with laughter. Free Palestine and lay down your weapons. This is for the innocent souls that went to heaven, cause what happened in America on 9/11 happens in Palestine 24/7. Sing it. Free, free Palestine. 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 You might think carrying a weapon makes you tougher, but in Palestine.